And what we have likened what we're going through to is being put on like a Roman stretching rack. And you could imagine at some point you may just want to totally say, forget it, I can't handle this pain anymore. When you think about it, I find myself, even with my faith and all these experiences of waiting on God, I still find myself, if I choose to look at the wind and the waves, how long it's been, how long it might be, how much longer you can go, how much it's hurt so far, how will you go another week, another month, another year, whatever. You look at that stuff, you can begin to sink. He's always trying to get us to look at what we do not have and what's going wrong. And the fight of faith is really a fight of focus. It's where are you keeping your focus? One of the reasons why I'm still going the way I am after all these years is because I have developed this stubbornness in me to reject looking at the circumstances, not to pretend like they don't exist, not to be naive or delusional, but to subjugate them as if they do not exist, because they exist in the face of a promise from God that contradicts those circumstances. When we're going through the darkness, we have to remember what God has done when you can't see what He's going to do. So before I let you listen to today's episode, which is actually two journal entries pulled into one. One is the June 5th recording about the stretching rack, and then you'll hear June 6th, where I talk about that the battle or the fight of faith is a fight for focus. And in both of these recordings, you're going to hear me continue to talk about the suffering of having gone 9 months with nothing new happening, and that pain and suffering of having to delay deliverance when you know you could deliver yourself and you don't. Imagine having cancer. If you have cancer, you're at the mercy of God. You don't really have much choice. You have a hope for deliverance, but you don't necessarily have a guarantee. But supposing you had cancer and you had 100% guarantee, like you could somehow or another drink a certain product, or you could scoop it out yourself and get rid of it 100% guarantee. And then God comes along and says, don't. Wait. Leave the cancer cells there multiplying in your body. I will deliver you. Wait. Don't hire that Christian attorney. Fire your attorney. Wait. Put yourself in harm's way and I will deliver you. Brothers and sisters, it's a much higher level of suffering. It's a much higher level of denial of self when you have an opportunity to deliver yourself and you don't. And that's why there's so much suffering that you hear in this story. In addition to the fact that Lisa and I's relationship, it was just such a beautiful, amazing gift that God had given us, that there's no way we could not experience suffering being apart. Like, we feel like an appendage is missing at that point. Okay, so listen to this. Filter everything you're going to hear in these next two parts of this episode, all the suffering and all the talking about faith. Notice that even though it's difficult, I'm constantly speaking and believing faith. And notice the providences, the numbers, God telling me He's going to deliver me. Notice the fact that I talk about having a marker day. Pay attention to the fact that once again, God is telling us the future, because what Michael Criswell doesn't know in these recordings, he has no idea when his deliverance is coming. Take note of the fact that the following episode will be the very next day after the second half of this. The second half of this recording was recorded on June 6th. The following day was going to be an amazing triple deliverance. Three remarkable things, one of them absolutely amazing, that happens the very next day. Where we're at in these recordings reminds me of being on a Roman stretching rack, and you'll hear me mention this in the recording. It reminds me of the story that I first read about in Fox's Book of Martyrs, a story about a man named Nicomachus who had been found out to be a Christian. The governor of Rome was going to torture him to get him to renounce Christ. The method of torture was the Roman stretching rack, and that's where they tie your hands and your feet and they begin to crank on these wheels and they pull you apart until literally muscles, tendons, ligaments begin to pull apart, I guess, detaching from the bone, and the pain must have been absolutely excruciating. And they did this to many Christians in order to get them to renounce faith. So this young man is found to be a Christian, and the governor tells him, if you'll renounce faith in Christ, you can skip the stretching rack. And if not, we're going to torture you. And he says, After all that my Lord has done for me, I cannot possibly renounce him. So there he goes. He's on the stretching rack. And they begin to pull on him and pull on him and pull on him. And the pain gets so bad that he is apparently trusting in his own strength. And he comes to the breaking point and he renounces faith in Christ. They immediately stop his suffering and they let him up off of the stretching rack. And he immediately, as he stands up, he drops dead on the spot. There was a 16-year-old girl that was watching this public display of torture against the Christians. Her name was Denisa. And she yells out, "You miserable wretch, for a few moments of pain relief, you have surrendered an eternity of bliss and peace and salvation in Jesus Christ." Immediately, they recognize she's a Christian. She too loses her life as a result of this. But the point is, if he would have just held on a little bit longer, he's feeling like he can't. Hence the reason he gave up. How many people stop short? Like that one company I heard a minister tell years ago that had dug for years on this one gold find, they stopped 3 feet short of the find. And the next company that came in only had to dig 3 feet and they found one of the largest gold deposits in history. What Nicomachus gave up in that moment was an eternity of bliss. We can't even calculate what he gave up just to have a few moments of pain relief. We could have given up this amazing relationship, this extraordinary blessing of God in our life. If we were just willing at any time, we could have gotten rid of all the pain and the suffering and just shortcut ourselves by delivering ourselves to stop the pain. Brothers and sisters, this is a really good teaching example because you hear in these recordings, we're being pushed to the very edge. We're being pushed to the point of being a Nicomachus, wanting to quit. And yet, by the Spirit of God, we're not depending on our own strength. We're continuing to draw grace from Him. We're continuing to persevere. And just to show you in these recordings how close we are to major blessing. And directly, some answers to prayer that will solve a lot of the pain problems that we've been having in the story thus far. It's going to happen the next day. Things are going to begin to break the very next day on the 7th. It's such a picture of Nicomachus. So filter everything you hear in this recordings, our sufferings and my holding on to faith. Filter it through the fact that the very next day we are going to have and experience a tremendous deliverance. May God bless you as you listen. So it is the 5th of June, and I've had some really nice prayer time. I made a video of the trail, part of the trail, the first part of the trail for Lisa this morning. I kept her up way past her bedtime and we had such a beautiful, beautiful conversation today, mostly about the beautiful relationship that we have and we anticipate because of the fact that we have so much of a trust and love for each other. And we've been so transparent with each other and there's no encumbrances in the relationship. So the intimacy is incredibly high and beautiful, and we just continue to stay so excited about it and so thankful to the Lord for it. We're still both really suffering. We are in total darkness where you cannot see at all anything. It's definitely the darkest it's been in the last few weeks. The suffering has just been much more tangible. The darkness has been much more perceivable, and it's this the hint of hopelessness. Underneath of all of it, your faith, there's this constant knock at the door from hopelessness. Knock, knock, knock. Can I come in? Can I tell you about all the things I'm seeing with my natural senses? And we have to literally every single day, we have to put these things down. We have to constantly call to mind God is totally in control and believe it by faith. I'm having to call into the highest level of practice, that which I've been preaching for years, and believing that God is totally sovereign. These are those things where you find out if what you really believe in a Sunday morning service or in a Wednesday night Bible study or in an early morning devotion? Do you really believe that in life? So this Christian life is what I see is constantly proving what you say you believe and who you are. We find out whether or not we have grace when difficulties and opposition and suffering and long periods of waiting come upon us. You find out how patient you are or impatient you are. You find out how stubborn you are, passionate you are, how without the grace of God you perhaps are, etc., and how much flesh is ruling in your life. And as the time just goes on and on and on, it really is just a very exhausting process, and yet we're being kept. We're doing it every day. This whole thing, I've probably captured everything I can think to capture about it. It's all about the fundamentals that we've been hearing about in devotions and reading about in the Word and hearing in sermons for years. Perseverance of the saints. You know, let him who walks in the dark, who has no light, learn to rely upon his God and trust in the name of the Lord. And all you who light fires for yourselves, go walk in the light of the fires you have set for yourselves and the sparks. And this is what you will receive from me. You will lie down in torment. If you decide to go make it happen on your own, when God brings darkness, you'll lie down in torment. So we are really in the fear of God and in the faith of knowing we cannot be dissatisfied with our blessing if we obey Him. That God is not going to allow us to feel like we outgave Him. I believe this principle by faith. It's been taught by many saints better than me for hundreds of years. So we are denying ourselves in the ways that God has told us to do so, believing not that the time is being wasted. This is a principle we talked about this morning. Not that we're wasting our time by denying self-gratification, denying self-deliverance, etc. We're not wasting our time, we're investing it. We see that this time of suffering is not just, the suffering is not being wasted, it's being invested. The Bible says if we suffer because we're conscious of God, this is commendable before God. What does that mean but that we are investing it? That's remarkable. I just had to pause the recording and it was 5:44. Lisa and I basically looked down at the exact time when we were talking this morning at 5:44. Do not be afraid. You'll not be put to shame. Do not fear. You'll not be suffering disgrace or humiliation. And so here we are, though. We're walking in darkness, and Lisa found a tremendous streams in the desert. I believe it was from June 4th, about all night long, God pushed back the waters, and it was in darkness. And he's saying, are you in a time of darkness? And even though you have faith, you're still looking by faith, you still see nothing. And that's exactly where we're at. And I told Lisa last night, I said, what we're going through is textbook where God delays and delays and delays, and he pushes you so much farther than you thought, and the lowest place you go is far beyond what you expected. You would have thought that it would have been achieved a while ago, and God still takes you even lower, exactly as Thomas Boston said. You look at like the four levels of Job, just going lower and lower and lower. He's struck by Satan, he's struck by his wife, he's struck by his friends. And just when you think the guy's finally low enough, God comes and speaks and cuts him down even lower. And this is what I feel for sure is just textbook that what Lisa and I are going through. And we also do feel a sense that this kind of suffering is for this season has probably gotten very close to finishing its work, where it will eventually go beyond its point of usefulness. And what we have likened what we're going through to is being put on like a Roman stretching rack. And it's quite remarkable of an illustration. You know, the Romans, as one of the tortures to get them to renounce Christ and give up their faith, they'd put them on this stretching rack that apparently stretches you from limb to limb, and you cannot
fight it, and it would be pulling apart the muscle tissues and the ligaments and do just horrific pain to the body. And you could imagine at some point you may just want to totally say, forget it, I can't handle this pain anymore. And you would be screaming. And if you were left on your own to fight this, no doubt you wouldn't make it. You wouldn't make it. But with the grace of God, you could endure it. God could make that pain somehow or another less than the pain of you surrendering your faith to Him. And you'd be willing to go through that suffering as many millions of martyrs have. And Lisa and I feel the best illustration for what we're going through is a Roman stretching rack, where we just keep being stretched and pulled and stretched and pulled and stretched and pulled. And you think to yourself, how much longer can you go? But we look back, and we were thinking back in October, you know, 7 months ago, that, oh wow, we just can't go any farther, and this is as far as we can. You know, you would feel like, I mean, I would always say that deep down I knew, okay, Lord, we can go however long you want. I would tell Lisa that, but I didn't realize He would make us go this long. And this is a complete contradiction of what He did with P and I. I mean, He put P and I together in like 90 days. It was very quick. But He had a completely different purpose for that marriage than He does for Lisa and I's. Lisa and I's relationship is so good. I told Lisa, I said, sweetheart, it would be an injustice in heaven. Even after we've suffered 21 years in a terrible relationship, respectively, apart from one another, independently, and we've waited and had all these bad things, I said, you know, this is so good. So I told Lisa that it would just be wrong if God did not make us pay a serious cost to get into this. I mean, you have to pay with your life to get into Christianity. If anyone finds his life, he will lose it. If anyone loses his life, He will find it. You have to take up your cross. You have to deny yourself. So you have to pay the highest cost, your own life, to get into Christianity. My, how different the truth is from what is believed in contemporary Christianity. I said a prayer. I believed in my heart and mind that Jesus exists and I'm good. What an absolute tragedy that people read the rest of the scriptures and say, oh, that doesn't apply because I believed by faith. I said a prayer. Unless a man gives up everything he has, he cannot be my disciple. And then once you get to be the disciple of Jesus, it's the greatest joy, the greatest adventure, the greatest fulfillment, even in this life, you can have. Granted, it's also the greatest suffering that you can face, really, in my humble opinion, because you're suffering for the right things. Nobody feels sorry for you when you're suffering because you're in love with drugs or pornography, or stealing, or hurting other people. Nobody's going to feel compassion for you for that. But it's compassionable, it's commendable when you suffer for doing good as a Christian. Even God says so. So we're on this stretching rack, and when you think about it, I find myself, even with my faith and all these experiences of waiting on God, I still find myself, if I choose to look at the wind and the waves, how long it's been, how long it might be, how much longer you can go, how much it's hurt so far, how will you go another week, another month, another year, whatever. You look at that stuff, you can begin to sink. And I can feel the pain of that. I can feel the suffering of that. I can feel the terror of that even. And so my thoughts are constantly redirected to faith and to God being in control of all time and all circumstances. The most recent example is regarding what's going on with our bags. So today is now the 5th of June. The bags arrived in New Zealand on the 3rd of April. They left on March 31st. So you're talking about like 2 months and maybe 5 days ago that those bags have been out of my possession. And over 2 months now, it was 2 months to the day on the 3rd. That they arrived. And so 2 months and 3 days, our bags have been stuck in customs. It's really unprecedented. We've never heard of anything like this before. And the communication between luggage to ship, FedEx in New Zealand, and the customs in New Zealand has been absolutely a joke. It's been a joke. The information we get from Luggage to Ship is always out of date, and they've been such a great company, though. They have followed up. It's not their fault. They've done an incredible job. I couldn't recommend them enough. But they're getting stuff that's late, too, because FedEx in New Zealand is just horrible. And I guess they're just not doing, the person's not doing good follow-up at all. And then there's, if they're taking this long to get back to us, that means they're taking that long to get back to customs, and customs is taking long, and the whole thing just keeps dragging on and dragging on. Lisa said yesterday, it feels like they've taken, you know, they've hijacked our bags and they've taken them captive. They've stolen our stuff. And it's like, well, here we are willing to pay the money and they still keeping our bags. And she's like, that should be against the law. And I said, yes, honey. I said, but we have to remember. And she knows exactly where I'm going when I say this. I said, we have to remember that God is allowing this. God is in control. I said, you know, when Paul and the criminals on the ship in Acts 27 were going to run aground, and the angel came and told him as much, and told Paul that he was going to spare the lives of all those who were with him. They were criminals, and yet God was going to spare their life on behalf of Paul. Hopefully some of them turned to Christ. He tells them, look, we're going to run aground. We're going to have to swim to shore on planks. But you will not lose a hair of your head today. You look at that, and I said, sweetheart, nothing is happening outside of his will. God is allowing it. We're doing everything we know to obey him, to wait upon him. He's dragging it out. He's making a lesson of perseverance and endurance. It's character development for us. It's hope and encouragement for others who will suffer the same thing. It's a picture of what we have to suffer waiting for Christ and the end times, being on a stretching rack of circumstances or time, pushed far beyond your ability such that you despair of life, feeling even the sentence of death in your heart. This is happening that you might not rely upon yourselves, but on God. We would not have made it if we're not relying on God. There is no way we could have made it this far if we were not relying on God. And I said, baby, those bags are exactly where they are because God has allowed them to be. We're very tired. I feel myself really being exhausted a lot of times in prayer. I'll begin to pray and I'll run into exhaustion very quickly in prayer where I just can't keep praying like this. It's really quite remarkable. We're trying to maintain our faith as best as possible. We're walking in total darkness and yet trusting God that he's sovereign. So again, with the bags, a perfect example, it'd be so easy to get really frustrated about the bags, really frustrated with the New Zealand government, really frustrated with the New Zealand FedEx rep. And instead, what I'm choosing to do by faith is recall that God is the one who's in control. He's the one who brings calamity. He's the one who brings delays. Even when Paul says to him in Romans and the Galatian church, he mentions about trying to come to them several times, but Satan stopped us and stopped me. But yet, you know that that is permitted by God. There's a purpose in that. Perhaps to teach them not to depend so much on Paul. Perhaps to keep Paul continually isolated from being able to have the joy of fellowship so that he can continue on with some divine revelations. Perhaps some of the letters we have today that have been such a blessing to millions wouldn't have happened if Paul would have gotten out of prison sooner and been able to go spend time with those churches. And God was thinking of the churches that follow, not just those. No doubt about it. I mean, we are far more significant than they were. There's multiplied hundreds of millions of us. There was only a handful of them. Those letters were far more for the people that were to come than they were even for those churches. I mean, God loves them, obviously. But as far as numbers and impact and the reason God was doing that, it was for all of us primarily. It's like I feel the same way about my recordings and my story, that my story is for me first, but primarily it's for the people who follow, for the thousands of people who've taken comfort, instruction, light out of these things, hope, so forth and so on. Here we are, and I'm saying God is in control of New Zealand customs, not New Zealand customs. There are no secondary causes, and this is going to be proved when those bags, I believe, there's no way with the track record God has demonstrated so far in doing everything in our story in precise, in particular my whole story, in precise periods of biblical time frames, There is no doubt in my mind that God is going to do the same thing with these bags, and that will prove what I'm saying. There is no doubt in my mind that God is going to do the same thing with these bags, and that will prove what I'm saying with an actual living example, that there are no secondary causes. It's not that there's some grumpy customs person who doesn't like Americans who are Christians, who's holding my bags back. It's not that Satan saw those were my bags and he's just intentionally trying to harass me. No doubt that he wants to do that. No doubt it's been disappointing. And no doubt when those bags arrive, it's going to be like a breath of fresh air to Lisa, and it's going to re-energize her faith. It's like coming across an oasis. Those are everything that I own. Everything that her husband owns is being sent to her. No doubt God is intentionally holding those bags back to cause Lisa suffering, to stretch out the stretching rack time and to maximize. There's no doubt about it. I have no doubt this is a way of God. He's intentionally delaying it. And then those bags, once the purpose is finished on our end, those bags will be released on a precise time. There'll be some precise timing. Those bags will be released on a precise time. There'll be some precise timing. Just like the 7 months and 7 days it was when God had me send them off. Right now it looks like, oh, you should be so frustrated, and how dare those people, and what horrible customer service. But see, I'm looking below the surface. You have to judge things correctly and see what is below the surface. And what's below the surface by faith and trusting God is knowing that He is completely sovereign in control of all these things. That if somebody falls asleep at the wheel on FedEx side or custom side, they're doing so because God has put them into that stupor. God is working for a date. And these bags are going to be such an incredible, perfect, real-time example of how powerful God is, and that there is no secondary causes. Real-time example of how powerful God is, and that there is no secondary causes. Right now, it looks like we're victims. We're victims of Satan at worst, or victims of the customs in New Zealand. And of course, you know, the picture of the snake, the whole thing where I felt I got bit by a snake last week. And then I get in the car the same day and say, oh, I should take warning from this. The last time this happened, there was a real snake in my path. And then here it turns out I go to my car and there's this 6 foot long snake stretched out in the road, blocking me from driving down the road. It's a picture of God showing me Satan is blocking our path. We wanted to come to you. Certainly I, Paul, did again and again, but Satan stopped us. How does he know Satan stopped him? There are no secondary causes. It's not the Romans that were keeping him in prison, or the Jewish rulers that were keeping him in prison that were stopping him. Satan is in control of those people. Paul knows it, but God is allowing it. Hence he says a chapter later to the Galatians, I pray, may the Lord himself make a way and open a door to, you know, get me to you, type of thing. So there's no secondary causes, and when you realize this, you can relax. So when something is really frustrating going on in your life, there's no need to be frustrated about it if you believe God is in control. It's when you don't believe God is in control that you get frustrated, that you suddenly start feeling the need for justice, the need to complain. And I just think that these suitcases are such an incredible example of this. That God, you can see clearly, who has ever in their life heard of suitcases being stuck for over 2 months in customs? 5 suitcases. You'd think I'm trying to import narcotics. It's a bunch of t-shirts and pants from Walmart. I have the cheapest clothing and my, you know, just all my personal belongings and salt packets and deodorants and you name it, all that stuff that I live on and all that. And everything I own is in those suitcases, nothing of too much value, of course. But it is so incredible to see and know God is doing this intentionally. We have to remind ourselves of this. It's like Satan will come and whisper, and your flesh comes and whisper, those dirty bad customer service skills, those rotten people, those this, that, and the other. Nope. When you're serving God, it's just like when somebody would beat you down. When whatever it is, the persecutions, physical, mental, emotional, if you don't see that God is the one allowing that, then you'll get really angry and upset at the people. It's why I never am mad at politicians. I'm mad at the Christians who think that the crotch-grabbing president was a man chosen by God for the purposes of blessing America. That gives me an indignation that would sometimes almost make my blood boil. The insanity. And just recently, A.W. Pink was talking about the leader as a reflection of the people, that the people will rise to the level of the leader and that God uses the leaders to show the condition of the people. And people haven't understood that. That when there's a godly leader in history, the people have a tendency to rise to that godliness. That's a reflection of what's going on in the people, the leader is. And so when you have a crotch-grabbing, arrogant, lying, prideful hypocrite in the Oval Office, that is a picture of the morality of the people. I mean, it's unbelievable. And then those people are so depraved that they believe that this is God's choice. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's like you're living on another planet. You might as well say God is an alien. That's as believable as believing that God... I'm getting sidetracked. Those are the things I get mad about. I don't get mad at politicians. Evil, selfish, sinful, rebellious, life-loving, money-loving, pleasure-loving politicians do what they do. And we shouldn't be surprised. And because I am not living for this life and trying to save my life in this way, I'm not angry and upset about what these people are doing. I don't ever get upset about politics or people. I don't even pay attention to this kind of stuff. Because I know God is in control of all of it. And He tells me to keep my mind and heart focused on what He has for me. And we have to stay focused on that. And then it's when these things come up, God allowed it. That's what I see in every way in my life. When Tyler's catalytic converter is stolen right in front of our house, God allowed that for a reason. And we have to trust, if we are Christians, living a life of faith, obeying Him, that anything God allows in our life is only going to be for our good, even though it never feels like it to begin with. So, really hopeful for the 6th of June, which is tomorrow for me. And man, do I feel the darkness. I don't feel in despair, but again, if I look at the wind and the waves and I don't keep my eyes on Jesus and keep my eyes on the promise and keep remembering, I find the farther down this road I get, the more important it is to remember the deeds that God has done, to remember all the answered prayers and the $44,000 fleece and answer to prayer and miracle and God getting the tiny house out a day early to save us $1,200 and the answered prayer with her cousin to let the house stay there longer and not have to move it. And God, all these little prayers, we have to remember these things when we're going through the darkness. We have to remember what God has done when you can't see what He's going to do. That is a saying that I should put down. We have to remember what God has done when we cannot see what He is going to do. Or better yet, what He is doing. Because He is at work. And I've said this to Him many times in the last few weeks, that, oh Lord, I know even though we can't see it, You're at work. He's arranging the circumstances in time so that when the appointed time arrives, it will happen and nothing will stop it. But that appointed time hasn't come yet. And Lisa says, but the time, you know, and she's talking about how long it is. She is so cute. Oh my goodness, she's so cute. She always says, but it's that long time that we have to wait, you know, until He does. But you don't know how long it's going to have to be. I said, I know, sweetheart. And then I have to always just gently remind her, not much, but I just gently remind her, let's remember. We don't want to worry about tomorrow. We just need to get through today. Just get through today. It's when you start thinking about all the tomorrows and the weeks and all that stuff that can be ahead that you really can start to sink. And when you realize how much you're suffering now and you don't have tomorrow's grace today and you know, you may have to wait again tomorrow, that can be very painful. So it's so important to stay in the moment, and you just have to keep staying one day at a time, one day at a time. This whole thing is just, I keep saying it over and over again, it is just amazing. You have two people who love each other so much, and God has told us not to deliver ourselves, and we have several ways that we could. We could be together a long time now, but I said to her again this morning, I said, oh, sweetheart, there's just such a richness that I see in this blessing, that it has just become much more rich over time. And it wouldn't be fair in heaven for us to receive something this beautiful without having to suffer a great deal because of it. In order to have it, we have to suffer. I mean, the greater the value of a gift, the more you'll have to suffer to go into it. And the greater the battle, the sweeter the victory. This victory is going to be so sweet. We are so incredibly in love, and we have such a deep respect for one another and a trust for one another that it's just so beautiful. We can't put it into words. I think that I found myself this morning realizing when somebody asks me to describe our relationship, we have to just simply say we are not able to put it into words. It's extraordinary, and leave it at that. There's no other way. I mean, no matter how many times I say I can't put it into words, even that doesn't do it justice. So it's clear we have to suffer. Otherwise, we'd get lost in this and turn it into something it shouldn't be. And it's kept God at the front and center of our life and heart in this. And man, the victory is just going to become sweeter and sweeter. And how I hope it is soon. How I hope it is soon. Waiting for God in the dark, it's difficult. It's very, very difficult. Causes a lot of pain. It's like a constant river of suffering you can feel running below the surface of your life. It's always there. You cannot escape it any more than you could escape if you're on a stretching rack. I mean, that's a perfect example there. If you're on a stretching rack, you're going to feel it. Even if they stop the stretching and you kind of get somewhat used to the pain, you're not dying, you're still alive, you're still going to feel it. It's always there. Maybe it's not excruciating, making you scream, until they then stretch it farther. And that's what happens, is we keep getting stretched. I don't think I've ever had such a clear experience spiritually of God stretching us out like on a stretching rack as I'm having in my relationship with Lisa. We are being stretched and stretched and stretched and stretched. And it's like you want to see what will break first. It's like, will we break or will the circumstances break? And it is incredible. You know, like literally, like you stretch a person, it doesn't matter how much Jesus they have inside them, they're going to die. You're going to rip their limbs off and they're going to bleed out right there. And that's it. You took them too far. It doesn't matter how much grace they have. The human body can't live without blood. And it's not something I've heard of God doing except for in raising the Ezekiel bones. But, you know, the point is that no martyrs that I'm aware of ever had their arms and legs pulled off and bled out and still lived. You can only go so far is the point I'm making. And we are wondering if the stretching has had its work, where you find yourself going, okay, how much farther? Granted, God could show us, oh, I can take you a lot farther. He could show us, but you wonder at this pace how useful it would be when there's going to be continued character development, you know, as we do life as a married couple. How much more useful will this be to just continue to stretch us out, or as the one writer in Streams talks about, to continue threshing the wheat and continue grinding the wheels, as Isaiah says, you can't do that, or, you know, it crushes it. And we are being kept. We're being kept, but it's tough. It's difficult. It's pain. It feels like we're constantly being threshed, and it feels like the horse's wheels are coming over us. And I asked the Lord yesterday, I said, Lord, show me another 416 if you want me to fast, you know, and do a real strong fast on this. I saw 416 a couple of days ago, and I said, Lord, if you really want me to fast to break through, please show me on this and help me to know. And otherwise, you know, he just keeps showing us, you know, he'll deliver us. We saw 5:55 twice this morning. I looked down at 50 minutes and 55 seconds. And then the next time I looked at the time, it was 55 minutes and 5 seconds into our call. I said, sweetheart, I've seen 5:55 twice this morning. So really, really hoping You know, that God is, and the thing that just keeps me getting going is thinking about that finish line is going to be so sweet. When I get to touch my bride, I get to see her. Feels like the Lord saved definitely the best wine for last, and He's saved a surprise for us. Praise His holy name. It is 9:22 in the morning on June 6th, 2022. I am fasting. I prayed yesterday, Lord, if you really want me to fast. I had seen a 4:16, which is a connection to Esther 4:16 when she asked them all to fast for 3 days before she went to the king. And so yesterday I prayed, Lord, if you are wanting me to fast in order to break through where the enemy is now holding us captive, if you really want me to fast, because this is not something I've done a lot of, it feels like my whole life is a fast. And, you know, super humiliation in circumstances. I said, Lord, show me another 4:16. So last night, I walked into the kitchen at some point or in the evening time, and it was 4:16, and I had just walked in the house. I said, sweetheart, here it is. This is the answer to prayer. God wants me to fast, so I'm going to fast today. And I said, I don't know if He wants me to fast for a full 3 days or just today. I'll really wait for the Lord to show me and help me. And so the whole point is that right now, things are worse than they have ever been in circumstances and in our soul, which is suffering, you know, the most. Lisa said she's never been through any suffering like this in her life. She says, I mean, now that is an extraordinary statement. For a woman who suffered the abuse that she suffered and the hell she went through in that marriage, a relationship of 21 years, marriage of 16, that is absolutely unbelievable for her to say in the face of such a glorious promise that she said, I don't think I've ever suffered like this. And it's where the suffering is every single day. And you wouldn't get very many people who could empathize with you or feel sorry for you in this. I told her last night, I said, not many people have ever even experienced, like we hadn't ever experienced a love like this. An intensity, a companionship, a blessedness of heaven upon anything this good. We've never seen anything like what we have experienced in our relationship, in spite of it being a long-distance relationship, for the last 420 days. Today is day 420. We've hoped and prayed, and man, we feel the suffering. I can feel the suffering and the emotion right below the surface. It's a daily, nonstop, it never ends suffering. A friend of mine last night I was on the phone with, and he said, man, he says, it must be so tough for you guys. He goes, you're so in love. He said, to speak causes pain, and to not speak causes pain. And I said, brother, exactly. It is very, very tough for us. Lisa had mentioned even yesterday about how tough these phone calls are. Because it's, she says, I just keep wanting to pull you through the phone. And this might sound ridiculous to somebody who's not in our shoes, who doesn't understand what God has done in our lives, who hasn't walked through all that we've walked through swampland-wise before we got to this place. And somebody who doesn't understand how good it is, they could never understand the pain we're suffering. We both have concluded if the relationship wasn't this extraordinary, if we were not so incredibly in love with each other, then the pain would be a lot less. To me, it's a picture of loving Jesus so much that your soul pants for Him as a deer pants for the water. If you did not love Him and need Him and appreciate Him so much, your soul would not be in anguish over Him. And I believe the Lord is still really trying to make a picture out of our relationship to give us glimpses. Of course, knowing in part and prophesying in part, but of what this thing looks like from heaven's perspective, how this is a picture of the whole relationship, experience, love, longing and suffering for Christ and Christ for His bride. So we have this suffering that is inescapable, and we have our moments where everything's okay. We're not trying to stir up anything that would create more suffering. It's just always there. And there's this pining of the soul and spirit yearning for this promise of this good rest. And in the face of continued delays and continued difficult circumstances and Satan holding us back, that creates even more pain, which creates even more desire for this thing that God has promised. You walk through a parched land, a desert land, and it's parched, and you're eating the same spiritual manna, these providential numbers and promises that God shows us every day that he did not show to our forefathers. We're eating this every day in this wilderness journey. This is just another part of the wilderness. As one Puritan writer said, this entire life is really a wilderness journey. And then you just get to go to an oasis here and there. So we're back into another part of the journey of the wilderness, and we are eating that same spiritual bread every day, and the circumstances and scorpions multiply, and the poisonous snakes, literally, just a few days ago, that snake that was blocking my path on the car, in front of the car, in that video that I took after I thought I'd got bitten by a snake on the trail. And I find myself stuck just telling Lisa I love her and I miss her over and over again as some sort of a valve, a pressure relief. You know, oh, sweetie, I love you so much. I miss you so much. Oh, baby, I love you so much. I miss you so much. And that's kind of my way of trying to have some pressure relief. She struggles doing that because it makes her want to go farther and it makes her even more frustrated, etc., you know, and expressing her love for me. And we are nonstop pining. It's a terrible thing that has just, it seems like it's just gotten worse. And our relationship has just had much deeper roots, and we've found that a lot of the types of suffering have leveled off, and those things that come early on in a relationship, questions, wonders, sensitivities, a lot of those things have subsided dramatically with the growth and maturity of the relationship. But we're at this place where it seems very clear the Lord is showing us that Satan is blocking our path. I've seen two instances, one in Romans and one in Galatians, where Paul says that he wanted to come to them multiple times, again and again. But we were prevented from doing so, or Satan stopped us. The day that I saw that snake, I had mentioned 2 minutes into the recording, Satan is blocking our way. And then I have the feeling I've gotten bit by a snake where it was just a crazy thing where a branch smacked me in the shin and totally caught me off guard. And then, of course, I get to the car, see the snake, and it's just like the Lord is showing me, this is what's happening. Satan is blocking our path. And God is allowing this. God is allowing this. This is not happening outside of his divine control or will or power. He's allowing it. And what for? It tests us. It develops increased perseverance. It stretches out our faith. It is used to bring more character development. It is used to make more room for Christ in the place of the ugly flesh and soul that rages and wars against God, the Galatians 5:17. And so we are learning so much. I feel like we're learning so much. Obviously, there's also attacks from Satan to try to discourage me, to make me think that the reason why this is being held back is because of our disobedience or our lack of faith or some grumbling or what have you. And Lisa's been very honest that she's struggling to see the goodness of God's timing. She knows that he's faithful. She knows he's going to come through. But because of all the suffering, she's really struggling. And she's saying this over and over again, that she says, I'm just being honest, I'm really struggling to see the goodness of God and his timing. This is just going on so long and it's hurting so bad. And I said, you know, and I've always just tried to explain to her that no matter what, we have to know that his timing is good. Look at how everything he's done is in precise dates and times. It's just that the flesh doesn't feel like it's good. So I've noticed in a few conversations with her, I've tried to get her to begin to consciously be aware that she has two parts in her. She has spirit and soul. The spirit renewed in the image of Jesus Christ. And the soul, which is part of the dead man, which can never be renewed. It can be saved, but it can't be renewed. Totally. It can be renewed. You know, Romans 12, be transformed. You know, renewed in your thinking, renewing of your minds. and we are doing that, but it can never be completely put down dead as if it never rebels against God, that it has perfection, not in this life. So it always is there lying like a snake wanting to jump up and strike against the goodness of God, the timing of God, the delays of God, the ways of God. And it's wanting to falsely accuse. And I said, we have to begin to see, you have to remember to see this as two parts of you and stand with God in condemnation of the part of you that has this soulish feeling and judgment against God. I mean, I have it too. I told her, I said, you know, there's this part of me that could so easily look at the despair that just seems to run right below the surface or perhaps around the corner. I can just look right around the corner, and if I look too much, I could see despair and hopelessness, and just everything turns black and dark, and it looks like nothing is ever going to come out of this. We've waited so long. We've gone through, you know, in our instance, we've gone through over 24 plus dates that we felt we had markers for, that we thought God was going to use and mark to move us forward into this process of being together. And again, I've said it before, oftentimes many things far less significant happened on a lot of these dates, but not the big thing. So for example, we had a 110 marker, Joshua 110 marker for this past week. For 3 days, something would happen. And sure enough, 3 days later, I get the call from her cousin. And he says, man, just leave it there. I'm okay with it. Leave the tiny house there. I'm fine. I'm okay with it. Just get your backside here. Make that your whole mission. And so there was a blessing and an answer from God to prayer, but that was not moving us forward. It's still delaying. It's still keeping us going. And then, you know, last night, Dan brought up, you know, the books and how he still looks every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I said, brother, there's no sense in you doing that. I said, I've never seen this few book sales. It's like everything is dried up. You talk about the Brook Cerith drying up. I mean, this could be a very perfect picture of the brook dried up. The donations, very nil. The John 7:17 challenge, contacts through the email form. The books, I've already mentioned the books, but the baggage, my getting there, everything is being held back still. It's absolutely unbelievable. It's incredible. I've even seen where, for the first time in my whole ministry, in the last, let's just say, month, I've put up two videos that instantly had some sort of an error on YouTube and said, no stream, try again. I've never seen this in all the years that I've had a YouTube ministry, and two videos in a row that I've put up. And the last one lasted for almost an hour. And I just kept clicking it and clicking it, and I'm like, what? I have no idea. And a few people said, oh, it's showing up for me. And you just see these things. Everything is being held back. And it kind of reminds me of the trusting God in the storm days. I take great encouragement thinking about that. The trusting God in the storm days, where those 2 weeks, Satan fought against me like tooth and nail to prevent me from being able to get that video rendered and up on the internet. And, you know, he has succeeded now in stopping it from continuing to spread. But again, I believe God has allowed this. There's no doubt there has been a tremendous narrowing in my ministry. And at a time when I think the most amount of people should be listening, the least are. And at a time when the revelations are the highest and the deepest and the greatest, it's the lowest and the fewest number of views. What I feel of the last month is there's this awareness that I normally do not have in my faith journeys of a hopelessness and of a darkness. I'm not looking at it. I'm not in despair. But there's an awareness like a devil looking over my shoulder called discouragement and despair. And I can feel it there. And it's the black darkness and the when you look at the feelings of, man, you have no idea when this is going to break free. And you've thought many times it was and it didn't. And the circumstances just continue to drag on and drag on and delay after delay. I mean, here it is today. It has been 2 months and 7 days. 2 months and 7 days since I sent off those bags to New Zealand. And they are still stuck in customs. It looks like God is not with us. It looks like he's weak. He cannot help us. Again, I think of Brother Yun crying out, "You're weak and you can't deliver us. You cannot help us." When he was so upset at God because God just continued to allow him to get pounded and pounded and pounded. And that's what it looks like it's happening with Lisa and I. We just keep getting pounded and pounded. Now, praise the Lord, he has lightened up some of the dreams. Granted, Lisa and I are not talking about those really anymore. Because they were bothering me for a time, and we're just trying to figure out how to keep both of us as strong as possible. But it looks like, you know, for the most part, she's catching some break, and we're very thankful for that. We're thankful for everything God has given us. And then last night, Lisa had what she feels was a real breakthrough. I heard in a recording she sent me this morning, somebody one off from an immediate family member is having to have a terrible surgery on the brain in order to fix something that's going on tragically in her face, and this pain that she's in, constantly suffering. And so she's having a brain surgery, and the prognosis can be very poor. And Lisa, suddenly it changes the perspective, and it makes you realize how thankful you are for your own problems. And it turns out I've actually prayed several times with her and have given God thanks that none of us is in the hospital. None of us is having some physical ailment. God's grace and mercy is good to us in this area. We're just suffering in a different area. And she really took a lot of encouragement from looking up to the Lord last night and being thankful that she even has me to suffer for. And that's one thing. It's always a matter of perspective. And this is something that I have found myself reminding her of many times, is that you have to force yourself to look at what you have and on what God has said you will have, not on what you do not have. But Satan comes, and it's always an attempt to get you to look at the wind and the waves. And the flesh doesn't need hardly any help. It's constantly reminding you, it hasn't happened yet. It hasn't happened yet. It hasn't happened yet. I want pain relief now. Where is this happening? Where is the evidence? I don't see anything. I don't hear anything. There's no movement. Nothing's happening. It's being stalled. I'm really struggling. I'm impatient. I'm in pain. So the flesh is right there, and Satan doesn't have to do much. He just throws a little gas on the fire, and the flesh goes on its way. And then Satan, probably with his minion, runs off and does the same thing to somewhere else. He just adds a little fuel to the fire that's already there in the flesh. He's always trying to get us to look at what we do not have and what's going wrong. And the fight of faith is really a fight of focus. It is really a fight of focus. It's where are you keeping your focus? One of the reasons why I'm still going the way I am after all these years is because I have developed this stubbornness in me to reject the looking at of the circumstances. Not to pretend like they don't exist, not to be naive or delusional, but to subjugate them as if they do not exist, because they exist in the face of a promise from God that contradicts those circumstances. In fact, it's interesting, this comes to me now, that people of faith have a tendency to look at, if I understand this correctly, how it was worded, people of faith view their circumstances through God, rather than viewing God through their circumstances. They view their circumstances through God. They see God through their circumstances. I have to go back and see what it is, but it is this point that I'm making where the fight is a fight of focus. For example, this morning I found some wonderful scripture verses about, you know, the righteous man will suffer many troubles in this life, but the Lord delivers him out of them all. Psalm 34. And I think it's like verse 19 or something. And then you look at all these scriptures. Proverbs says, you know, a righteous man may fall seven times, but, you know, the Lord lifts him up, and all this. So I started compiling a couple of those scriptures. And you get this instant relief, and you get this instant sense of all is well. And then I looked at today's scriptures, memory scriptures, and they're about humility before God. You know, the Lord takes delight in his people. He crowns the humble with salvation. He comes near the lowly. He knows the proud from afar. He gives grace to the humble, but opposes the proud. And I'm looking at all this and I'm going, oh God, you know, and Satan is always scheming to help the accuser of us, the accuser in us, the flesh that accuses God, to try to point out the circumstances. Look, this is being held back. And that's a real battle that I'm facing, is that for the first time, I'm struggling, I think, more than I normally would. And I can't remember a time, I mean, maybe I have struggled with this in the past, but it's been a long time, a number of years that I can think of, that I'm struggling because of the circumstances to begin to wonder if I've done something wrong. So when you see that the circumstances don't change, and you see that the thing just continues to drag on, and time, no matter how much, like, it's hard to explain how much pain and suffering can be packed into day after day after day after day after day. You never get a break. We've now gone months, literally months, without anything happening. There has only been one thing that has happened in 9 months of time. One thing, and that was the sending off of the bags. After I attempt to go to that airport, and then in September, the tiny house successfully lands. After that, nothing happens. You're talking about a span of 8 to 9 months. Everything was moving along. Man, I tell you, that is painful. I don't care what you're waiting for. That is painful to do. And Lisa and I don't have jobs in the secular world where we have are forced 40 hours a week to go think about other things. We don't have that. We don't have little kids in diapers that are screaming in the middle of the night for us to go have to cuddle or whatever, or do this. And we don't have that. We have nothing but time against us. And there's this awareness every single day, like when you're in the wilderness, you have this awareness of it every single day. That's what's happening. And it's just, it makes the suffering so difficult. I found myself so drained. I couldn't even read the Bible. Can't do, you know, devotions, tired of prayer. I've already prayed so much. And it's like, what do you do? And I'm like, well, if I was sitting in a jail cell, what would I do? And it's like, you'd just be sitting there and, I don't know, scratching marks on the wall or whatever. And you start trying to find a movie. Nothing satisfies me. Nothing takes away the suffering. Lisa said she's found herself looking online for shopping for anything she legitimately needs and trying to distract herself. You know, to find some pain relief, where we're just literally, you're forced to look at these difficult circumstances. God has not permitted that either one of us has. And not only that, but how long he delayed my work in this. Holding back my work gave me no distractions. It's really nice when you have work as a distraction away from your sufferings. If you have a terrible marriage, at least you can get up and go to work the next day and focus on the people that are around you and focus on doing your job, and that gives you a little bit of pain relief, much like sleeping. But we're without it. So I'm fasting today, and really felt I had a confirmation from the 4:16 that I saw yesterday after praying specifically God would show me a 4:16. And then I opened up the Crook in the Lot to read to Lisa a particular thing. And while I was scrolling through the book, trying to find the place, I come across these words where it says, extraordinary prayer and fasting have often proven to deliver great results for the removal of the crook in the lot. And I've just thought, Lord, this is confirmation. You want me to fast. You know, and we've come to this place where nothing is moving. And so apparently sometimes, and this is not something that I've ever done hardly again much of, but I'm willing to do it. And I said, Lord, if you want me to do it, I'll do this. And so I'm going to be fasting today and really getting after the Lord. I've come out here today in prayer, and I don't have hardly any feelings. I don't really have bad feelings. I don't have good feelings. I just have faith. And I have to keep focused. Again, the battle is for focus. If you keep looking at, and the flesh is there, unfortunately, all day to remind you, you don't have it. It's not here. Da, 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 da. You're selling so much pain. You thought it was going to happen. It didn't happen. Look at this. Look at this circumstance. And you start to sink. It's looking at the wind and the waves. If you're in the wilderness and you're looking at the giants, the Amalekites, and you're looking at the cities with walls up to the sky, no wonder the spies came back and said, we can't do it. Their focus was on the obstacles and the circumstances rather than on the God of the circumstances. It's about focus, and that's how I believe that I have made it this far, is a stubborn determination to keep my eyes every day fixed on God, the God of my circumstances, not the circumstances. And I think the one circumstance that is tripping us up the most, so for example, we have not, this is a very interesting insight, we have not tripped over looking at the New Zealand government, and we have not tripped over looking at the passport. The circumstance that's trying us the most is the time. Once again, proving the most difficult thing in the life of a Christian is waiting on God. Waiting on God is excruciating. It never goes away. It's day after day, hour after hour, minute after minute, week after week, month after month. It's very, very difficult, and it's like constantly on your back, screaming to you, you're not there yet, you haven't made it yet, you haven't seen the promise, it hasn't happened yet, you're still stuck. Time, and unfortunately, it's something that just gets worse, whereas a lot of the other circumstances may or may not. A circumstance may be static. I either have a passport or I don't. The borders are either open or they're closed. That's a static circumstance that may not change too much, but time is something that's dynamic. It continues to grow like a monster. It just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. So this time factor is the beast. It is the greatest test of all. For example, if you look at the circumstances that were standing between P and I getting married, there was like 30 some obstacles, but God got us right through all of them as we just moved forward. But he put us together in 90 days. Lisa and I are standing on day 420. That's a lot more than 90 days. And we're still not together. And we're having to, you know, still deal with this giant whale of an obstacle time. And if you do not, if you start looking at it, how much time there's been, how much time will there be, how long will it be, this can cause you to sink. And this creates suffering, it agitates the flesh, and it causes you to grumble against God, and that leads to disbelief, etc. So it really always is about being absolutely stubborn. This is why I think so few people experience power, miracles, deliverances, and faithful promises from God. Because the circumstances can be so overwhelming, and there's not a whole lot of people that are out there living it enough to teach, that have enough practical experience. And the only way out is to rest faithfully in God's promises and constantly say, but my God is faithful. My God's timing is perfect. My God is sovereign and in control, and he knows exactly what he's doing. He knows exactly when to do it. He knows exactly how to do it for my good and his glory. And I absolutely believe, and I have this joy. This joy came into me yesterday when I was in prayer. This joy of the fact that God is so faithful and he's going to do this. Yesterday when Lisa and I were in prayer, I started to weep. I said, oh baby, this joy is just in my heart. The goodness of God in the land of the living is to be had. We are going to see it. God is going to come through for us. He's going to deliver us. And it's like I'm always knowing this. Deep down, no matter how long, no matter how dark, no matter how difficult, there's always this knowing deep down inside. In the face of me having been wrong so many times about a date that came and went, you would think I would kind of be like, well, I don't know, maybe God's not going to deliver. No, the doubt has never been in whether or not, it's always just been about when. And yet I've had this strange experience of God seemingly allowing us to believe for date after date after date, and they've sent these crushing blows to us. So now we're in power reservation or energy reservation mode, where we're trying to be really careful about, again, what we focus on, what we spend our time on, who we're spending time with. We're trying to preserve our energy to get into this land, be very careful to obey him. And I'm really hopeful that God is going to deliver us this week in some way. I told last night, Lisa and I were on the phone. I said, sweetheart, this could be the week of weeks for us. I said, if God really wanted to do something fantastic after all this suffering and all this time that has gone by, this could be an incredible week. We have two markers, today and the 9th. And I'm really hopeful that God is going to deliver us this week in some way. I told Last night, Lisa and I were on the phone. And I said, sweetheart, this could be the week of weeks for us. I said, if God really wanted to do something fantastic after all this suffering and all this time that has gone by, this could be an incredible week. We have two markers, today and the ninth. And as it turns out, the Lord's asking me to fast, and I'm tempted to try to fast all the way through the ninth and see a breakthrough. But the ninth, today is 1 year and 40 days since I asked Lisa to marry me. So we're really hopeful. Not only that, but we have these outstanding things that could break this week. We are waiting still for these bags to get released. That's going to be such an encouragement to both of us and such a rich blessing to my wife. It'll be a real strengthening of her faith. Pray that this breakthrough that she had last night, where she humbled herself before God, repented of her sin, and told him that she's been struggling in her flesh to believe that his timing is good, and getting her heart back fully low before the Lord. Maybe this could be the Lord's reward of her to finally give her these bags. And also, we're waiting for the paperwork on her name change. So we have three things we're waiting for: some sort of sign for me to move forward, the bags to be released, and for her name to be given. So if that all, something could happen this week, and it would be so incredible to see all these things break at one time. That would be so incredible. There are some days we just feel so exhausted. You wonder, how in the world can you keep going? This suffering is taking a toll. It is exhausting. It emotionally drains you. You know, the excitement of the relationship in the face of the pull of not having it and all that pining and suffering takes a tremendous amount of energy. I'm so proud of my wife. We've neither one of us done this perfect or sinless, but we continue to walk in the fear of the Lord and, as she would say, the goodness of his faithfulness. We're waiting on him. We're fighting the good fight of faith. We're allowing him to have his way with us. And hope takes so much energy. It's so difficult. It's so much easier to just quit. That's the problem with faith, is it is so hard and there's no escape from the suffering of it. There's no escaping the pain. Like, I can say pain and suffering right now, it doesn't mean anything. It's just a word. If you could get inside my soul in a few moments when there's not a recorder going, and you could feel what it feels like in that pining and wanting, as anybody can who's waiting for a long promise, the pain is it can be unbearable at times, and it just screams, just give up. It's the pain of being in the wilderness surrounded by scorpions and snakes while trying to believe a promise that doesn't ever seem to come. Where is this good land that you've been talking about? And it's unfortunate that the difficult circumstances conspire to cause you to grumble against God, which prevent you from being able to get out of the difficult circumstances, which causes more pain and suffering, more grumbling, and it's round and round you go. You're trapped. It's a spiritual catch-22. You can't get into the spiritual land because you're grumbling. And because you're not in the spiritual land, you're hurting, which causes grumbling. And because it's taking so long to get into the good land and out of the grumbling, you continue to grumble, and the pain causes more. I mean, and it's just unbelievable. It's scary. In fact, it was incredible timing today. Lisa talked about last night in her recording entering into rest in his faithfulness, rest in his goodness. And today's devotional from Sparks was about entering into his rest and about how you do not through unbelief and the grumbling, and how Satan conspires to rob you of your rest, and how when you don't have the rest, it ruins your testimony. And how can you tell other people to come into the faith or trust God when you yourself are not displaying the rest? That doesn't mean that you're not going to have excruciating suffering. I mean, Paul the Apostle said, you know, fears within, troubles without. You know, he was saying pressures without, you know, and fears within. And I came to you much fear and trembling. And he talks about 2 Corinthians 1:8. We don't want you to be uninformed about the hardships we face in the province of Asia. We were far beyond our ability to endure, such that we despaired of life. We felt the sentence of death in our hearts. And so, you know, you must enter into the kingdom of God through many hardships. Oh, there's the first locust I've heard of the year. How funny is that? Man, that's a real sign of season change. That's the first. Granted, I haven't been out here in a couple of days, but actually, no, I was here yesterday. But that's the very first locust I've heard this year. Wow, that's kind of neat. I'm amazed. I wish I could put all of this into words, but the pain is indescribable. And you have to just keep enduring. And sometimes, like, even a Bible verse can't lift you up. The Bible can't lift you up. You're at the mercy of God, and you just have to wait and suffer. And yet, deep down, there you keep going because you know that God is faithful. You know that God is faithful. Oh, I feel this big wind coming right now. I love it. I love the wind. When it just picks up and blows like that, I know that the Lord is going to deliver us. I've known it for a long time, but my circumstances and my flesh say, oh, it'll never happen. So we just keep going, and we're at the mercy of God. I mean, for He's the judge of the quality of our faith. He's the one that determines whether or not we've grumbled too much. If the Lord is pleased with us, He will lead us into this land. And that's what I can say now, is if the Lord is pleased with us, He will hear our prayers and deliver us. And sometimes it looks for a very long time like He's not pleased with you. As the one writer writes, extraordinary sufferings are not always indicative of extraordinary sin, but extraordinary gifts. And I would also say extraordinary callings. You know, the apostles suffered more than anybody, and they would have been the least sinful of anybody as well. I have no doubt that I'm far more sinful than the apostle Paul was, and yet he suffered more than I did. May the Lord have mercy on us. I've cried out to Him for mercy, and I'm just going to stay low before Him today and going to suffer through the fasting and ask the Lord to really help me to keep my spirit low and to hear from Him, and praying and hoping and waiting for a breakthrough, that I will be filled with joy, that the Lord will have come to our deliverance and crowning the humble with salvation and forgiving us our sins and shortcomings and doubts and unbeliefs and mistakes and all that, and delivering us according to His righteousness, not ours. That our hearts may again be filled with joy and our mouths filled with praise. And we have been praising Him along the way, that we know He's going to do it. We've said that He's already done it. Time just hasn't caught up yet. And this is definitely something that I feel is a good thing for me to remember today, that I believe the Lord gave me that insight, that when we pray, the Lord answers immediately. But you just don't always receive it. That the Lord does not say, ah, let's put that on the back burner and answer that later. The Lord already knows whether or not He's going to answer and how He answers. And so when we've prayed, He's already answered. It's just that He sets that answer far out in time when He knows that the due time has come. And so the truth is that my bags are already at Lisa's house. Her name paperwork has already been changed. We're already married and enjoying our marriage. I'm already in New Zealand. In heaven, these prayers have already been answered, but time has not yet caught up. And then the trick becomes, or if you will, the need is for us to persevere to that prayer, not until God answers it, but persevere to the prayer He's already answered. That somewhere out there in due time, this prayer has already been answered. And we just have to wait and persevere to that promise, to that answer, to that day where it's already waiting for us. Now, that's remarkable to think about it, that it's already out there. And if you look at it like that, it gives you some better encouragement instead of waiting, oh, God, you haven't even started yet. It's this idea, no. That promise and its fulfillment in due time, it will not tarry. It will happen. He will make it happen. And it's already happened. It's just that since we live in this trap of linear time, we feel like, oh, it hasn't even started yet, it's not there. But from God's perspective, being omniscient, He already sees exactly what day it's in. And with that, I'll just leave it there. 10:11, as I end this recording, no one who hopes in Him will be disappointed or put to shame. Praise His holy name.